As some of our universities bounce through the challenges of money and protocol, others are emerging with glowing optimism. One is, at last, the University of Wollongong, just noted as number 12 on the national list of achievers. The new Vice-Chancellor is Professor Max Lu, who has a fine reputation both as a material scientist and a safe pair of hands, as they say. Now he's published a paper on one of our major national debates, energy and productivity, and actually writes that we in Australia could, with the right policies, become a world leader. Are you still researching yourself at the bench?
No, unfortunately, I stopped. But I'm forever being curious, and I do read the latest literature in the area of, say, for example, hydrogen storage, hydrogen production, and to keep abreast, so to speak, you know, what's happening at the frontier of my field. But really enjoy listening to some of the young scientists talking about it. For example, we have here at the University of Wollongong, you know, so fortunate to have a large number of scientists like Gordon Wallace, Jerry Swiggers, who Jerry in particular, he started this company called Hysata. Hysata is a remarkable startup company, only about 4 or 5 years old, and they are now on the way to produce the best electrolyzers in the world to produce cheap green hydrogen.
Now, you mentioned Gordon Wallace before, and of course, 3D printing of body parts, which is still going on the innovation campus across the highway here, which is incredible work. But hydrogen, you've written about in your paper just published about the future of energy, really, for the whole country. And I thought hydrogen was a bit low-key at the moment because of the financial considerations, because the chief scientist, Alan Finkel, was extremely fond of it as a technology, but the market didn't back it up.
Yeah, Alan and I go a long time back. Both of us share the passion for hydrogen. Hydrogen is a clean energy carrier. It's not the energy source, but it still has a huge potential. Only if when the policy investment community and industry and then research community aligned. And this is something that I highlighted in that article that I recently published. For us to be a leader, we need to coordinate at the national level, at the state level, policy in terms of major project approvals and planning, national investment in the infrastructure, as well as R&D and industry deployment. So we have some good examples of things happening. Hysata, as I mentioned, is one of those examples. And they are a startup company, but they work very closely with many energy companies. And the Australian government has recently invested via the Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence. I think the total investment is $73 million to really support researchers at the forefront of hydrogen and alternative fuel development to develop the cutting-edge solutions for some of the technologies involved in hydrogen, for example.
May I ask you about that? Because you mentioned that you've got on campus a brilliant new way of doing it. Of course, the traditional way is to use, if you like, electrolysis. Old-fashioned, we used to do it in labs at school, and you get hydrogen coming out and a couple of other things like water. But the trouble is that when you've got to provide energy to get it out, sometimes you use more energy than you actually yield. And another problem is the transport of the hydrogen. Some people suggest that ammonia would be a good way to transport it as well. So how are you solving those sorts of problems, do you think?
There are two problems you identified. One is the production side, and the other one is the storage and transport. So in terms of the production, the mature technology is electrolysis, as you mentioned. However, the traditional way of splitting water by electrochemistry, the electrolyzer, only works to about 60-65% efficiency. So that means that there are still about 30-35% of the energy lost. So now scientists, and particularly those scientists who work in catalysis and electrocatalysis, trying to improve the technology of electrolysis. And Jerry Swiggers, Jerry has come up with a brand new technology to split water. And that's why the Hysata's technology has been demonstrated in megawatts scale already. There's a huge, huge pipeline of orders come from overseas for Hysata's technology. They can reduce costs to be below $2 per kilogram, which is the holy grail target that's going to be commercially viable. It's going to beat the first generation or second generation electrolysis technology that is available now by a large margin. So that's the production. Storage, I think the challenge for hydrogen transport lies in how are you going to store hydrogen safely in large quantities. So there are many competing technologies now. The mature technology is compression. So you compress the gas, hydrogen gas, in a bit of denser gas, in a high-pressure cylinder. And that still is the prevalent technology, but I think there are safety concerns. If you put this on the vehicle, for example, even though some of the buses, fuel cell buses, are running on hydrogen using compressed tanks. But if passengers use this in their back of their car, they might be concerned. So therefore, there is a new frontier. It's called solid state adsorbent that would store hydrogen. And this is an area that I worked for many years before, when in my heydays as a scientist. So we developed a patented technology that can store enough percentage, enough weight, enough quantity of hydrogen under very low pressure. So almost atmospheric or 2 bar instead of 600 or 700 bar. So there's no safety concern, but there's still need to scale up on a large scale to reduce the cost of the whole system. In fact, I know that some of the Chinese scientists and in Shanghai Jiao Tong, for example, they have developed a system that can scale up to 1 ton of this magnesium-based alloy for storing hydrogen. They can transport this in a very mobile way. You can just load it like a big cartridge in a truck, and then you can swap the cartridge for any vehicle application or even for shipping. So this is the future. I think material science and nanotechnology constantly bring up all the exciting frontiers and the breakthroughs that would really push this frontier of hydrogen storage and transport. So I see that in the next 5 to 10 years, the emerging technologies in the new way of producing hydrogen, new way of storing and transport hydrogen, will see hydrogen economy really take off. But that's not all of the energy transition, because we do still need some fossil fuels, because the scale of the energy is so huge. Without cleaner way of using fossil fuels like carbon capture and storage, combining with gasification of coal, that's clean coal technology, without using gas, we cannot satisfy the energy demand of the world.
But are there any capture and storage technologies that are working efficiently? Because usually you ask that question and the answer is no.
I think at the moment there's a lot of a large-scale demonstration. There's no industrial-scale CCS in operation that is economical. So to put it that way, that is still being developed. I think at the same time, renewable energy, for example, solar photovoltaic, solar PV, has become so cheap, and the manufacturing and the scale-up of new generation photovoltaic technologies is also promising to further enhance the efficiency. So that is going to move very rapidly. So at the same time, we still rely on partly in the energy mix in the next 10, 20 years.
But you're saying in your paper that Australia has got the potential to be really the world leader putting these technologies together. Energy could be the name of the game for Oz.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm excited about the future of energy in Australia, in the energy transition, because Australia is rich in, we're endowed with our energy resources. So therefore, in the next 10 years, in my view, we need 10 years to really, really align things, invest in the R&D, but also make the policy environment more conducive for industry and R&D to really work together to drive this transition so that Australia not only become self-sufficient with the renewable energy, clean energy, but also become an exporter. And in that way, we become a world leader.
There's a huge market here as well, the world leader, as you said. But also in your paper, you talk about the need to coordinate. You know, here we've got a fragmented society. And I'm talking about the world, not just Australia.
Yeah.
You know, fragmentation is the name of the game, and flooding the zone and all the rest of it. So there's more confusion, competition and climate wars and energy wars and all that stuff. What really, if you had the ear of the prime ministers and the leader of the opposition and everyone else on a good day, would you ask them to do?
I would say to really unite the whole country, to really say, well, we want to change our industrial structure. Energy is the bloodline. So we want to be at the forefront developing the renewable energy future. At the same time, we are so fortunate to have so much resources. We can become the leader of technology and export our technology. So in that regard, I would say to any political leaders, prime minister, ministers, that, well, let's work together towards the long-term future. So we need to invest. The ambitious Australia plan, R&D, is a good start. And we need to develop the mechanism to coordinate the approach.
And Wollongong could be the capital of the investment and the revolution.
Yes.
Professor Max Liu, the new Vice-Chancellor at the University of Wollongong.
And there's the Ambitious Australia report again being mentioned by another notable researcher.